Great moments are born from great opportunity.
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Average Joe's wins in a shocking upset.
I feel shocked.
You suck compared to me.
So you guys are two prep school white guys podcast.
We are underdogs.
They stay ready, so you don't have to get ready.
Man, I haven't even told anybody this. This is kind of crazy.
Robinson for three. Bang!
Hello and welcome to the Long Shot Podcast. I'm your host, Davis Reed, and I am back with the co-host. Are you now officially the co-host?
I'm definitely the co-host. I have a question for you, Davis. Yeah. How is your back? Because I imagine it's
it
in
hurts.
Some pain.
Yeah, it hurts.
For carrying the Long Shot Podcast over the last, what's it been, 5 weeks?
I didn't really want to start the show with.
Speaking, you know, we should start the show with you getting your flowers. Oh. You know, you've given out a lot of flowers on this show.
I thought you were going to cut me off from bringing the show in.
I thought about it. I almost just interjected
and
was like, whoa, this is hello and welcome. It's my line. But a part of it just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
You know, I felt like you kind of deserved that moment. I feel like you've earned that moment.
You let me have the stage. I appreciate
that. Yeah, you've put in a lot of hours, a lot of thought, a lot of sleepless nights, I'm sure, into preparations for the show, into executing. I know you don't do any of the really back-end stuff, the editing. Shout out to Blue Wire because they certainly take the burden off of you for that. But I do feel like you deserved your flowers, and I think you've gotten them. I don't have some literal flowers, even though there's a nice plant right there. Maybe you could grab that.
Yeah.
And
I'm going to consider
that could suffice as some flowers.
Thank you so much.
Speaking of plants and kind of the context in which we're doing this in, we are back in the great state of New Hampshire, the Granite State, I
Is
believe
that right?
they call it. Yeah, the Granite State. Huh. Lots of granite. Granite capital of the United States, in fact.
I don't know if that's true.
No, it is true. Okay. There's a lot of granite.
I thought it was the live free or die state.
It's also the live free or die state. I love that tagline, 603, all the way to my core, man. Absolutely. It feels good to be back here. You very kindly made the trip, hopped on a flight from Kansas City. And yeah, we're doing this one back in person. This one felt like one we needed to do in person.
Yeah, 1,000%.
It would have felt a little disingenuous to do it over Zoom for a variety of reasons. But I also haven't seen you in a while.
True.
So it was an excuse to catch up, and we played a little golf, which was also nice.
Got a little sun.
I don't
know if you guys
just
can tell,
a touch. The weather up here is pretty nice, about 70 degrees away from the Miami, South Florida humidity. But no, it's been nice to be back. It has.
No, it's great to be here. I told you, I said, we took last week off. We let things simmer for a little bit after you guys lost game 7. And then I said, Dunk, I'm coming to find you. I don't care where you are. I don't know if you're in Miami. I don't know if you're in Boston. But we're doing this. And so
that's
here
we are. Or New Hampshire.
We got a lot to. I don't know where you want to start.
Well, there's a lot of different places we could start. You know, full disclosure, we're kind of running off cuff on this.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of content out there to be discussed, as we've acknowledged. I've been away from the pod for a little while, but it is nice to be back. Also, a little bit of anxiety about coming back
for
as
sure.
well. There's a lot to talk about. There's sort of multiple elephants in the room.
Purple cows in the room.
Multiple purple cows in the room that we should probably address. So I don't know where you want to start. Maybe you can kind of direct and guide the conversation.
Sure. I want to maybe we go chronologically, because the last you were here was right before the playoffs, with Mo. We sat down with Mo for a two-parter.
That was a fun one, yeah.
And then you locked in for Zero Dark 55, as we called it. And the playoffs started with a bang for you and for the Miami Heat. You guys crushed the Hawks in game 1. You go 9 for 10 from the field, 8 for 9 from 3. Fun fact, the most efficient shooting game in NBA playoff history since they started tracking that stat. Did you know that? Am I breaking that news?
I did not know that.
It's true. Chris Paul goes 15 for 15 this year in the playoffs. Your 9 for 10 was technically more efficient because you hit so many threes.
Threes.
True shooting percentage of like 129%, I think.
I mean, yeah, but these analytics, man. You just can't trust them these days, you know. Just a bunch of pencil pushers in a back dark room somewhere. I want the eye test, Dave. And I saw Chris Paul go 15 of 15, so I'm going to say that that's the most efficient.
It was impressive. Serge Ibaka has also had a perfect 11 for 11 in 2012.
Wow.
But your 9 for 10 is more efficient than both of those. You're throwing it in the ocean.
I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how you can get more efficient than 100%, but.
I don't either. I'm not here to break down the numbers. But the point being, I mean, you're throwing it in the ocean. You started off the playoffs with a bang. 8 for 9.
Yeah.
What was it, 27?
27. Yeah, started off with a bang. That's where it started. And then it went a whole bunch of other different directions. But yeah, I mean, you know, that first series with the Hawks, obviously we our kind of physicality and the tone that we set just from a physical standpoint night in and night out in that series, I think was really the difference maker. And they obviously got one in Atlanta, which they're, I mean, if you look at their record towards like the basically the last third of the season in Atlanta, they basically hadn't lost. So the fact that we got one in Atlanta was big. But yeah, you know, I think our defense really shined in that series. Offensively as well, Jimmy was really, really impressive. And then you saw Vic, you know, come in and close it out with Jimmy and Kyle both being out. Gabe played really well, stepped up. Max had a big game in there, I think game four in Atlanta. So it was, you know, really kind of a group effort, I guess, if you will. Obviously you saw, I think what you're trying to get to here is,
I'm not trying to get to anything.
The game one to game two dichotomy, that also kind of, for me personally, that also kind of set the tone for the rest of the playoffs, which was surprising to some extent from a personal standpoint, challenging as well. I think in general, the entire playoff run, obviously for us as a team, you know, I thought we had stretches where we played just really, really good basketball. And just to be a part of that in general is always a special thing. Go on a run, take it all the way to, you know, being one win away from playing in the finals. Obviously, I've played in the finals before, but still, it's something you never, ever want to take for granted. And being that close, regardless of what role or situation you're in, is something that, you know, I think every high competitive person, you know, is after, you know, that feeling of competing at the highest level, being the feeling of being one of the two teams that are playing when 28 are sitting at home. I mean, you look at somebody like Al Horford. We were talking about this last night when we were watching the game, the career that he's had, incredible career, incredible player, multiple time all-star, been on some really good teams, teams that have finished first in their conference, made playoff runs, and he's playing in his first finals at 36 years old.
Yeah.
You know, so for myself being in year four and having being on the doorstep of being in my second finals is not something that I take for granted at all, because I've just heard so many stories and I'm fortunate enough to not be able to necessarily speak to experience because I've been on really good teams since I've been in the NBA, but that this stuff is just not guaranteed. You know, you can put together a roster and think, oh, you know, we got a chance, we're a competitor, we could win it all. And very rarely do the pieces all come together where you can get as close as we did. So, you know, from that standpoint, the team standpoint, just super appreciative and grateful to be a part of that experience and to learn and to watch and to live it and to face adversity in a series from a team standpoint, you know, seeing how people come together and, you know, find solutions and try to win games in different ways. That's what the playoffs is all about. And then also from an individual standpoint, face that adversity, personal adversity of a situation that, you know, in the NBA, outside of my first year where I was kind of a two-way, a situation that I really hadn't been in a while. So from that standpoint, big, big time learning experience, you know, something that obviously I won't soon forget, which I think is a good thing in a variety of ways. Won't soon forget from the standpoint of kind of acknowledging and learning about playoff basketball and seeing it, but then also won't soon forget from a motivational standpoint as well, understanding, you know, that's a situation from a personal standpoint that I don't want to be in again, and making sure I do my due diligence to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yeah, it makes sense. Well, a couple things. One, I think you do have experience. You went to the finals your first full year in the NBA. Then you guys get swept in the first round, and then you're back to the Eastern Conference Finals. I mean, that's right. That's a broad spectrum of, obviously you can miss the playoffs.
Yeah.
But to
I've also missed the playoffs. First year, missed the playoffs.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you have. I mean, we've talked about how you have now crossed the threshold into being a quote-unquote veteran in the NBA. You're going into year five now.
Yeah.
So you have. You've seen a bunch of different outcomes for a team. So you do have that experience. As a player, you also have that experience. Maybe not at the NBA level, but this whole podcast is about how many times you've gone from starter to sixth man to it happened at Michigan. You went through it in high school. And I talked about that with Harry. I talked about that with your mom. It's like these weren't new experiences for you. You've gone through this roller coaster before. Does it make it any easier? This is obviously on a bigger scale.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't make it easier. You know, I mean, it makes it familiar in that it's not necessarily uncharted territory. And, you know, I was thinking about this the other day and having this conversation with some people who have been in similar situations in their respective careers and in different ways, you know, so they're not perfectly comparable situations. But, and I've said this on this podcast before, it does not matter if you're playing JV basketball, if you're playing middle school basketball, if you're playing college basketball, if you're playing in the NBA, the highest level, not playing it sucks, like in a lot of ways, especially when you feel that you're capable and you feel that you can help win. It's a really, really challenging feeling to combat, especially when you're on the cusp and in the midst of a run where your team is playing really well. It's this really challenging mix of emotions of excitement because you've sacrificed so much to the team and for your own in your own personal life to be in this situation. But you also understand that with that sacrifice comes an expectation that, and I'm not somebody that I don't need to be the center of it all. I very much have a certain level of awareness of and where I kind of fall in a pecking order of the social or not necessarily social, but like hierarchy of the NBA. But from the standpoint of just wanting to feel like you have a role where you're contributing to winning. And that's where it gets really challenging because it's this internal mix of feeling like you're capable and competent to contribute, to perform, and not necessarily whether it be getting that opportunity or feeling as if you've maximized the opportunities that you've had to parlay them into further opportunities. So, I mean, yeah, I have been in those situations before in terms of, you know, being taken out of a starting lineup, having my role shift in the middle of a season. But at the end of the day, it doesn't make it any easier. And that's something that I think is talked about all the time in terms of, in general, team settings, right? People talk all the time about sacrifice. What does it take to win? Well, we're going to need some people to sacrifice. And sacrifice is something that's really easy in theory, especially when you're the one telling other people, yeah, you got to sacrifice and do this. But this was definitely one point in my career where the onus of sacrifice fell on my shoulders, where I was really the person that was really sacrificing. Or felt that I was. I'm not the only one sacrificing. Other guys are obviously sacrificing as well. But in that sense, you know, it's a real challenge. And what I tried to do, and I'm not saying that I was always perfect in doing so, but I am proud in how I handled the quote-unquote adversity. Mind you, once again, and I've said this before on the show, is like, this is basketball adversity, which is all relative in the grand scheme of many things. So maintaining that perspective, one, first and foremost, I think is important. But then just also understanding that, you know, some of what's happening to me is outside of my control, and what I can control is how I respond to it, you know, how I choose to embrace these challenges, and how I choose to embrace them publicly in a team setting, not necessarily to like the masses. That's not really as important as much as it is just being like the consummate professional internally and not being disruptive. Because when you're trying to do something special as a team, that's where it can get tricky because you need every little thing to be in check. You can't have distractions. You can't have, you know, egos, mixed emotions, pulling people this way or that way. So what I really try to do is just kind of lock my mind into, okay, if this is the new reality of my role, then as corny as it sounds, like I need to do whatever it takes to excel in it. Now, once again, I cannot reiterate how challenging at times that can be, but it's also what comes with the territory of being a professional, right? So with that being said, I think the big takeaway is that I just learned a lot from the experience. But, you know, hopefully the goal is, right, to go through something and be better off because of it.
You are, I think, built better than most to handle that. I mean, it just based off your answer right there, you're a stronger, probably better person than I am. Because even me, you know, I got so fired up. And there are times where I wanted to come on this podcast, and because you're away from it, just like hop on here and start talking shit. But I knew, you know, I can't do that. And because you were handling it so well, professionally, by well, I mean professionally, obviously you're pissed, you want to be out there, you think you can contribute, you know you can contribute. Because you're handling it so well, it gave me some perspective. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, the other interesting thing about it too is like, you don't ever want to feel like you're handling it too well, like you're content.
Right.
Right. And I think anybody who kind of knows me, whether that be like personally outside of the scope of the Miami Heat or internally within the confines of our facility and our organization, I don't think anybody thought that I was just like cool with it.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, I think people understand the kind of like competitive nature that I have and the disposition that I bring to like my work and how seriously I take my craft. And just like being a professional and, you know, understanding too that like in a moment in a season that there are times when being a professional has to come first. And I think there was a general trust that I would get my priorities right in that sense, that if this were to happen to me, that and I think I've earned that trust with how I've like handled myself and the habits that I've developed. But, you know, it is a tough line to walk, because obviously that's not something I want to like just kind of go through and be all like smiley about, even if we are winning and like be about the team, but still like have your own, you know, kind of added fuel to the fire, which certainly I know.
But that says a lot about you though. Like, I think that says a lot about who you are as a person, because there are locker rooms that have to deal with they have to manage politics. And I would imagine that's true even in the playoffs for some teams. Like,
yeah.
You have to manage ego, you have to manage politics. So for the, this seems sort of backwards, but for the Heat to assume that you can go through that, because I'm sure that was the case, I think that says something about who you are.
I mean, I guess, I don't know.
I also
that
think
it seems a little speculative, but I mean, I appreciate what you're saying. I think that we talk a lot about how playoff competition, what's really unique about it. And as you move along throughout the playoffs, right? Because each round in theory, it gets harder and harder. Not in theory, it does get harder and harder, regardless of who your opponent is. It's really unique because it totally strips you down from a competition standpoint. It exposes every little flaw that you have individually as a team. So if it's doing that, which it does, I guess where it can kind of become tricky is if you don't have all your ducks in a row, that can be a serious competitive disadvantage. And where I was kind of taking my mind to was like, all right, if this is the current circumstance, I'm not going to be responsible for a competitive disadvantage.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I can't necessarily contribute the way that I had hoped or want to in terms of on the court, but I'm certainly not going to be a competitive disadvantage. And, you know, for me, like the other kind of shift became, all right, whatever that opportunity is, because I did feel like it was going to come around, and it didn't necessarily come around in the way that I had hoped or anticipated, but in life, like, things rarely do. But I kind of shifted my perspective of like, all right, well, I'm just going to make sure whatever opportunity I am presented, I will be prepared and ready for. And that's one thing where like, I definitely don't like regret it, because I'd rather be on the other side, on like the more committed side to it. But like, I think maybe I pushed that a little bit too much, where I was like, you know, working out extra, lifting extra, doing all this stuff, to where like I probably wasn't my like best, most rested, ready to go self on game days. But that's, once again, that's something that you I'm willing to live with, you know what I mean? And also, like, in a way, committing myself to, like, the additional workouts or this, that, or whatever also kind of gives me just a peace of mind.
it's a way of coping.
Yeah, it is definitely a way of coping instead of just, like, you know, sitting at home or doing this or that.
So are you
just kind of, like, living in my own mind, like, doing something active, doing something physical where I can lift and work out, get extra shots, do all that sort of stuff, I think helps.
So are you're like going in the gym post game?
No, I don't do the post game thing.
You're just working in extra workouts in a week?
Yeah, I don't do the post game thing. I've talked about this on here, and I used to do the post game thing earlier on in my career. I'll post game lift occasionally, but I won't post game shoot because I always just try to tell myself, like, all right, well, if I had played 30 minutes and, you know, went 8 of 12 from three, I wouldn't shoot post game. So why would I now try to, like, supplement my work post game? Like, instead, I just change my routine, right? I change my daily routine. So, you know, instead of if I'm coming, you know, before practice to get treatment when I'm playing 30 minutes, 25 minutes or whatever, and doing, like, more of a recovery lift and then getting some shots or spots in the court, now all of a sudden the shift becomes, like, I'm going to go get, like, my body primed and prepped. I'm going to lift harder. I'm going to work out harder. I'm not just going to shoot spots. I'm not going to do this. I'm actually going to, like, kind of get, like, a game simulated workout. I'm going to do my extra conditioning because I'm not getting that anymore when I'm playing as much. So in an opportunity that, you know, my minutes get extended and I have to play, like, I'm able to do so.
I gotcha. So to bring this back to where we sort of started, game one, you go for 27, right? And then that next game is 6 minutes. Then it's not 15 again in that series.
Yeah.
Do you?
I don't think it was. Well,
it wasn't really 15
in the rest of the playoffs, except for I think game.
Yeah.
You know, we kind of got blown out and I played.
Do you have any sense? Did you have any sense that was coming, or was that a surprise? Because what you said something interesting earlier. The reason I ask is you talked about how, you know, it's like whatever opportunity I get, I will parlay into, you know, and you've talked about that mindset before too, right? Like, same thing at Michigan. It's like, okay, I moved to the bench. Well, I'm going to take advantage of whatever opportunity I do get and earn those minutes back. I'm going to earn that position back. I mean, whatever. That's the mindset. It has to be to survive. You get your opportunity in game one. You do what you do, right? You're a top five, top three shooter in the world. You do what you do. But when that doesn't then parlay into more opportunity, are you aware of that? Like, how do you, is it easier to justify because you know that's coming, or are you blindsided by it? And then, like, how do you grapple with that?
No, I was surprised by it. But, you know, kind of what I was alluding to earlier, like, things don't always go according to plan. So just because you're surprised by something doesn't mean that it necessarily has to be, like, debilitating. And, you know, I think that particular game one to game two shift of that series was something that I probably let bother me a little bit more than I should have. And, you know, because in game three, I got my, like, 6 minute run in the first half. And, I think I missed a couple of shots and didn't play as well. Whereas, like, in game one of that series, I came out and got my point, it was more like 8 or 9 minute shift, but yeah. I made a couple and turned it into whatever it was, 25. So 25 minutes and, you know, throughout the rest of the game. So, like, I still think if, like, in game three I came out and hit some shots, you know, that's why I'm not, like, here and eager to, like, put the burden or like, responsibility on other people. Like, sure. I still think that if I had, like, handled my business and made shots and defended better than I did and know that I'm capable of doing. And that's the other side of it. Like, once things kind of, like, start to gain momentum, like, momentum works both ways. You know, in game one, when I make shots, momentum works in terms of, like, all right, like, get Duncan another shot. Let's get Duncan another look. In games, whatever, 3, 4, or basically kind of in, like, little spurts throughout the rest of the playoffs, it's like, if I command, if somebody draws a foul on me, all right, let's go back to it. Like, momentum works in that way too. Yeah, so,
totally.
You know, you can become a lightning rod in two directions. And in that sense, you know, it's part of the challenges and pitfalls that come with, like, high level competition. And that's where, like, I do feel like a good amount of the responsibility is on me to, like, shore up areas, weaknesses that can be exposed in high level competition. And, you know, with that being said, I do still feel like my best version and what I'm capable of is can absolutely contribute to like winning at the highest level and winning a championship. And it has. Yeah. I think there's like a track record for that as well. I mean, I think in playoffs in the past, I've absolutely contributed to winning. And, you know, we've also talked a lot about like situation and opportunity. And, you know, I think that's like the big shift, right? In my role was my situation was different. My opportunity was different. And that's also just like the nature of a season sometimes, you know, things kind of ebb and flow and change. And, you know, that's why I ultimately feel like the responsibility falls on myself to not be in that situation, not put myself in that situation again, as to where like it's got to be non-negotiable, you know, that I'm out there. And, you know, I have empathy and compassion for people that, you know, like someone like Spo, obviously he's coached at the highest level and you know, proven that he's, you know, far, far more than just adequate, you know, considered a top 15 coach of all time or whatever he was voted, and surefire Hall of Famer. It's like he's in the seat that he's in and he has to make tough decisions. And, you know, I'm sure that's not a decision that he makes lightly, but at the end of the day, like, it's not necessarily personal as much as it feels like it is. It's just part of the challenge that comes with being in that chair. And, you know, that doesn't make it any easier for me to swallow or to deal with, but it's just kind of the nature of the business, you know, in a sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. And you know, you live with the decision. Like he chose to go with a defensive minded athletic wings off the bench. And then you guys have games like, I'm going to go chronologically. You guys get past Atlanta, and then you get to Philly. Game one, you have your first DMP. Game two, you then come in, I think it's garbage time in game two.
Yeah, it was garbage time. Yeah, 50 seconds, last 50 seconds.
And so we've talked about this a little bit, but what I think is so interesting about those two games is, okay, at that point, it becomes clear that you're moving away from the rotation. I mean, again, in game one, you don't play. Game two, it's just garbage time. But the reaction after game two nationally is so much different than game one. Game one, you don't play, you guys win. Awesome. Game two, you guys win, but you're up so big that you come in at the end, because now apparently that's where you're at. And then it becomes, oh, Duncan's not playing. Duncan's not in the rotation. Wow, he's out there in garbage time. And then it really picks up in games three and four in Philly, because you guys are shooting it so poorly and you're sitting there on the bench. So there's a lot there. But first, I think it's really interesting how the reaction becomes so much louder when you get the garbage time. It's like that is a different thing than just not playing. Do you feel that too?
I mean, that's just more highlighting that the vast majority of those kind of pundits or whatever are just situational viewers, right? Like they tune on the playoffs. They don't really have a clear pulse of what's going on individual teams or what's happening or the trends.
They recognize.
It's just like, and I think the other side of it too, like after game one and at halftime of game two, like there were a couple interactions, you know, we're crossing at half court, you know, with the Sixers, like guys like checking in, like, are you hurt? Is something the matter? And I'm like, no, I'm healthy. So I think there was like a general confusion of kind of what was happening. Just because, you know, I think if you look at the Miami Heat over the last, you know, since my second year, right? I had kind of been the constant in terms of I've started, you know, I think I missed like two games because of COVID, and had started basically all the other ones. And obviously Jimmy is the big constant, but I mean, in terms of like nightly basis, right? Like Jimmy had missed X amount of games this year, 20 plus or whatever it was, and maybe missed, you know, 15 to 25 the year before. So it's like, I just had always kind of been in the lineup. So I think for a lot of people that was, who had kind of just been loosely following us had kind of always just plugged me into that role. But I think that more just speaks to like people not being super tapped in. But I will say, like, after that game, it was interesting because game one, you know, that was like the first time I straight up DMP'd. So I was like, damn, okay, this is new. And then game two was obviously tracking and trending towards being a DMP, and I get thrown in there in the last 50 seconds. And I feel like I do a pretty damn good job of kind of building up a little barrier around me in terms of like what I let in. And that was the moment where like I couldn't necessarily fully keep everything out because everyone was texting me like, yo, is everything okay? Blah, blah, blah. What's going on? But like, so at that moment, that was one where it wasn't quite a hermetic seal. Great science.
Really good. Okay, ding, ding, ding. That's our word of the day.
Yeah, hermetic seal. So in that sense, that was kind of like, whoa, this is where we're at, you know, kind of like a reality check. Because you have a tendency to kind of get so trapped in your day-to-day grind. Like, and that's what I resort to that on steroids when I'm like going through something where I just become so routine oriented and so like diabolically dialed into my routine of like, nope, this is what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna keep doing this. And that was one where it was like a little bit of a disruptor. And then, you know, we went to Philly and I didn't play in 3 and 4. And those are equally challenging just because I felt like those are games I definitely could have helped us win. But, you know, who would I be as a competitor if I didn't think I could help us win? You know what I mean? So it's like, that's also tough. And, you know, I alluded to Spo having to make tough decisions. It's part of, you know, just what it is. And it doesn't make it easy. Definitely a challenge, but you know, we ultimately ended up winning it in 6 and advanced into the next round. So, you know, it's just kind of it's also interesting how like this comes back to the situation and opportunity of like, I think, because I did play in game 5 a little bit and you know, got thrown out there after. I think part of it was like just kind of not the absurdity, but like just how clear it was, like we really struggled in 3 and 4 in shooting and I wasn't playing. I had felt the momentum had kind of come back around where I was going to get a shot in game 5. And but you know, being just kind of thrown out there, it's like, hey, we're not making shots, go make a shot, is like, and I truly feel like I'm built for it, but like that's also a totally different perspective and situation and impossible role and challenge. But you know, playoff basketball isn't easy. So and the rim's still 10 feet, I'm pretty sure, even when I just get thrown out there for 3 minutes and expect to make a shot. So there's no excuses in that regard.
Well, it's not just expect to make a shot, it's 3 minutes, you go 0-for-1, and then it's like, all right, well, it's not his night.
Yeah, right.
So you said a couple of things that are interesting that I want to go back on. One, you said Sixers guys coming up to you like, what's going on? Are you hurt? Like, did you get the sense they were like glad you aren't playing?
I don't know about glad. I mean, I will say like there was a cut, and I'm not gonna like get too far into it, and it wasn't even necessarily in the Sixers series, but like there were some conversations around, I think our scout just becomes a little bit easier when you're trying to slow us down, because kind of what I do is just it's like a curveball, you know, in terms of traditional offense. And that's not specific to the Miami. Like, you look around the league, and that's one thing that is really interesting. We can get into like the Warriors in this current series that the Warriors and Celtics are in right now, but like, you know, everybody's kind of playing the same. You know, now everybody's, and I think we do, Miami does something, we do some different things as well. I think the Warriors are entirely different. You know, it's like if everybody, Spo actually used this, and I really like it, so I'm going to steal it. It's like if everybody in the NBA is speaking French, the Warriors are speaking Greek, right? Like they're just totally doing something entirely different offensively. And what most of the NBA is doing is they're just calling up, you know, weakest defender, playing, you know, spread, playing ISO, and then playing out overreactions and drive, spray, kick, all that sort of stuff. But what you have to prepare for, I think, when I'm in the lineup is just kind of a wrinkle to that, because, you know, the handoffs, the catch and shoots, it's just a different action than you know, your 35 to 40 middle ball screens, mid pick and rolls, and ISOs. You know, it's just kind of a different pace. So I think in that sense, like, I think maybe we just become a little bit easier to prepare for. But, you know, there's give and take, you know, and that's part of the nature of being a coach and making tough decisions.
You did. There were a couple games where I thought that was still very apparent. Like, even in the short stints you got, I think it was game 5 maybe in Boston, you came in and you're just flying off handoffs, flying off pin downs, and you can tell the overreaction that comes from the defense in those moments. And I'm not just saying this to hype you up. Like, there is a lot
of... you're not just saying this because this is my podcast.
No, but Dunk,
our podcast.
Look, sorry. We don't need to name names, but there are people who reached out to me, in the NBA, who are like saying exactly what you're saying. These guys are easier to guard when Duncan's not out.
Are you considered an NBA insider now?
Of course not. Of course not.
You guys
can probably guess who those people are.
Yeah, right. What I learned throughout, and this is just a message for, you know, anybody who I think is going through this, and is actually a good friend of mine, college teammate of mine, Andrew Dokic, current assistant coach at Illinois State, college roommate, good friend, and not to throw too much shade at him, but he had some experience being in that same situation that I was in, being a kind of a bench guy who towards the end of his career got more opportunities, but it was never like, hey, this is your moment, we're going to give you the ball. It was never that for him throughout his career. And the advice he basically gave me was like, just do whatever you can to give in to the team. Like, get outside of your head by giving and breathing life into other people. Be the best freaking teammate you can possibly be. Be vocal. If you're speaking, talking, celebrating, cheering, you know, yelling out defensive coverages, then you're not in your own head thinking about, am I going to check in? And you're going to be 10 times more ready when you do. So shout out to Doc for that, because he gave me some good advice.
It's amazing advice.
Yeah, it is.
It's amazing advice. And it makes it, like you said, it makes it that much easier to stay engaged, which I think is the hardest part, because it's the importance of guys like that at the end of the bench that creates winning locker rooms. I truly believe that. You don't?
I mean, I think they're important the same way, you know, an athletic. I'm not gonna. They're important, but like, obviously the most important thing is, you
of
know,
course
like
you're not.
It's not like I was the difference in Game 6 in Boston.
Of
like,
course
no,
not.
Jimmy Butler having 47 points.
But you can move
points.
The needle.
You I mean, marginally, yeah. Needle. I think the idea is not that those people are so important, but more so
more so
that everything matters.
Of course, well, yeah.
When you get to that level of competition, everything matters.
We're saying the same. I think we're saying
the same thing. Because you're trying to create some sort of like grandiose thing of like, oh, you know, pat myself on the back.
I was
leading the charge. You know, like, it's just not. It's all right. It's important to accept reality, not deny reality.
No, hold on. I'm not saying you're leading the charge, but I'm saying that you make a difference.
I will tell you who actually helped me also throughout the process and who did really make a difference was Markeith. You know, because that's somebody who's been an NBA champion, had an illustrious career, just a really, really good basketball player. And for him, and we don't need to totally unpack that whole thing, but like, for him to be in the situation that he's in is entirely unfair in a lot of different ways, and he deserves to be out there and deserves to be playing. And not to say once again that he was always perfect, but like, he was making a difference, especially in that Boston series, in terms of like, you know, leadership, being vocal and doing all those sorts of things. So yeah,
so what you're doing is you agree,
you're
supporting my point.
I suppose those
things matter. They matter in winning basketball. They matter. I mean, you guys,
all the pieces matter. Shout out The Wire.
Sure.
All the pieces matter.
Yeah. You guys lost, but it's like, you got to the Eastern, you got one shot away essentially from going to the finals. And that's because it seemed like everyone was bought in. Like, you were vocal on the bench. Markeith is vocal on the bench.
Sure.
We all know what UD is like on the bench. Like, those things matter. To have those guys.
All the pieces matter.
Whatever. I'll stop trying to give you
all
your
the pieces matter. There what do you go. Got? What else?
Anything else we want to unpack in your journey here?
No, I don't think I have anything else, unless there's a pressing issue that you'd like for me to unpack more.
I don't
think
so. No, I thought that was, you're honest.
Yeah, I mean, it was, there's a lot of self-reflection
that
occurred as well.
I mean, look, I think it'd be easy for you to come, not easy, but you could come sit here and be like, this is bullshit. Like, I should have been out there.
Yeah, I mean, I think you go through phases, right? Like, I don't think that, and there wasn't, there were points where I think that.
But how couldn't you?
Yeah, I mean,
again,
of course.
It's what you talked about. Like, you'd be wrong if you never felt that way.
Yeah.
Like, you're not a pushover. Like,
I mean, I think now, too, like, with where I'm at right now, it's one of those things that I can't dwell on, but I can definitely not forget, right? And that's, I'm trying to shift my perspective now of like, okay, now with the off season, I have this incredible opportunity with this newly built in, packed in motivation, right? Like, motivation is just, if saying it's at an all time high would probably be an understatement.
Yeah.
After all the just trash, garbage, noise out there that exists, and I feel like I'm actually in a place where I think I'm channeling it in a healthy way, or I'm eager to channel it in a healthy way, to see if I am. I mean, yeah, I'm just, this off season, I really feel it will be a special one. I do.
That felt like a really eloquent, calculated way to be like, fuck you guys.
nah.
And you guys is, you can, you,
I mean, no, but it's a combination, right? Like, I don't think it serves a purpose to have all the blame just extend outwards, right? Like, it's a combination of the vast majority of the blame I have to like deal with and find a way to navigate through myself. Right. Like, it's ultimately, I'm the individual. Like, everyone else that says all the noise or does all this bullshit or has their opinions, you know, they have their families and they go home and rest their head at night and live their lives. Like, I am ultimately responsible for myself. So, yeah. Like, yeah, all that chatter can like inspire and incite and light fire like within me, but it's just like a little bit of sprinkling some gasoline on top. Like, the fire is all, yeah, Salt Bay, gasoline on top. Like, the fire exists now that I've created my own kind of fucked up and twisted little world where I have plenty of that.
You know, that's how you've always been. You've always been that way. Like, we've talked about it, I think, on this podcast. We've definitely talked about it privately. It's what you've been your whole life. Like, you've been the underdog, counted out, D3, benched at Michigan. Like, again, it's, this journey is not new. And so that fire, I think you've had that competitive, like, I have to prove everybody wrong thing forever. And then for the first time in your life, you are validated with an NBA contract and you find that fire again.
Oh, you think I got comfortable?
I'm not saying that, but what I'm saying is, in case you did, that quickly went away.
Yeah, no, I definitely don't think I got comfortable, because I maintain my same, you know, regimen and everything. I think, you know, you're right though, in that I think I show, you know, my competitive spirit and grit exists in a different way, and it manifests in a different way. It's not necessarily the same way as other competitors, right? Like, in terms of somebody that's gonna, like Draymond, for example, maybe, you know, you watch him play last night and it's just like, obviously he's playing with he's just like crazy
running football.
Yeah. He's just, you know, it's, and he's loud. He's talking, and that's who he is. That's him playing to his strengths and being who he is. I think that my kind of competitiveness rears its head in a different way. And honestly, it's more like in an empty gym, behind closed doors and in that sort of setting. And not definitely not saying that one is right and one is wrong. They're just different. But yeah, I mean, I guess you could say there's an interesting juxtaposition there between 9 months ago being validated in this you know, life altering way. And then just nine short months later, kind of like, all right, back to the drawing board.
Let's go. Both ends of a spectrum. I mean, it's like, could not have been more of a polar opposite thing.
Yeah. Seems like something that should be unpacked in a therapy session.
It does. I mean, in a way it does, but no, it kind of feels like this is what this has been.
Yeah. In a way, a very public facing therapy session.
All right.
Strong supporter, I should say.
She's got a great neck of therapy.
So you talk about
the fire burning as bright as ever. It's just, I'm cooking s'mores on it over here.
Have you ever seen Lord of the Rings?
Yeah.
You know, I can't remember the name of it, but where they're going to burn the ring.
Yeah, the eye.
I think that's Saruman, maybe. But
the volcano.
It's not, but it has a name.
It's like a lava pit.
Yeah, it's, but like that, it's that.
Yeah, that's
the fire.
Where is it in your body?
Just all over.
It's everywhere?
Yeah.
You feel it in your toes?
My toes.
Crinkle your nose.
Okay.
Wherever it goes, you always know.
Who's that, Jason Mraz?
No.
Colby Calais?
Yes.
Colby Calais.
That's nice.
I don't know why I thought Jason Mraz.
That's good.
He's a talented individual.
I can feel it over here. I'm actually warm. Yeah. It feels like it's coming from like your right
knee. All right, let's keep it.
You're talking about the fire burning bright for this summer. What are your summer plans? Can you hit us with those? I actually don't know, so I'm just asking.
Let's just keep it high level.
Yeah.
Actually,
last year, remember you said, I'll keep it vague. We're somewhere in California. And I was like, yeah, we're here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, right. Let's keep it high level, 10,000 foot view. Basically, just getting the body right. A lot of time in the gym, locationally. I'm staying local, South Florida, for the most part. And I'll pop up here very occasionally, see some family. We'll go out to Vegas for 2 days for summer league, just to touch base with, you know, teams and people and do some interviews, all that sort of stuff. But most of my summer will be spent, what do the kids call it these days? In the lab.
Yeah, where is, you are in the facility? Like if you're in Miami, you have access to all that?
I'll be in facilities.
Who trains you down there?
Just different people. We'll see.
Fine.
Yeah, you can't unveil the curtain entirely, you know.
Yeah.
You got to keep it vague.
Do you, when you say get the body right, do you want to change your composition
Absolutely,
at all?
Absolutely, yeah.
In what way?
Your body comp, put on some weight. Mobility's a big thing. Do a lot of Pilates. Get that right. A lot of strength work, a lot of speed work, move the feet, you know, slow feet do not eat. And
I
got to get my feet faster.
Slow feet do not eat. What is it, speed ladder? A lot of speed ladders.
The Brian Scalabrine speed ladder. Might be breaking that out. Carry that with me around. We'll see.
I love it. All right. You clearly don't want to talk a lot about that.
Yeah. I just, you know,
I get it.
I feel like,
don't let him see the work.
I'll speak for itself.
It's the Damian Lillard thing.
The goal is for it to speak.
Don't let
him
see the work.
Yeah.
We need to make a video of you running around doing tennis rackets.
Yeah, there you go.
All that stuff. All right, you want to talk NBA Finals just briefly?
Sure, yeah. What's our runtime right now? What are we at?
I don't know.
53 minutes.
Oh, perfect. Let's get to an hour.
Okay.
Or close.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we do this for 2 minutes.
Okay.
I just want your thoughts on the finals because we talked about it a little bit. We watched game two last night together. I don't know when the people are going to. The people might get this after game three.
Okay.
Game
three is a massive game in a 1-1 series, by the way.
Massive.
So these might be some cold takes.
They could be.
Yeah.
But we're not afraid to give them anyway. No. Well, no, but
I'll stand on it.
We talked about matchups a little bit yesterday, and I thought some of the stuff you said was interesting. With the Celtics having Tatum guarding Draymond and Robert Williams guarding
Wiggins,
whoever they classify on the court as a non-shooter.
Gary Payton Wiggins, yeah.
And how can you just talk a little bit about that? Because I thought you could do that better than I could. But I thought it's not new. It's not anything new we've seen from the Celtics. But having someone on Draymond pressuring him, not letting him see the floor, play quarterback. It worked in game one. It didn't work so much in game two. But is that something you anticipate seeing moving forward?
Yeah, I mean, starting off, I was very intrigued just matchup wise, and it tends to change throughout the series, but with how the Celtics chose to match up, because obviously Celtics defense has been kind of what they've hung their hat on since this run that they've been on since February or whatever. And, you know, I think with us, it's a little bit, it was a little bit clearer how they would choose to match up. And the Warriors, as I was alluding to earlier, they're just so unique with how they play offense. And I think one thing that, where a lot of teams make mistakes, once again, I didn't write the Encyclopedia of Basketball, so these are my own opinions. I just want to throw that disclaimer out there. But I think one thing where a lot of teams do make mistakes is they say, oh, well, Draymond Green can't shoot. We don't really need to guard him, and we're going to put a big on him, or we're going to do this, that, whatever, or we're going to let him catch it in the post and just kind of like do what he does. And Draymond Green is like, obviously Steph Curry is the focal point of their offense, but Draymond Green is kind of like the fulcrum in which it all pivots off of. And if you just let him catch, if you just let him handle, if you just let him operate in space, if you just let him post up, you're creating a nightmare for yourself defensively, because he is so good at finding Stephen Clay and JP and getting to handoffs and setting screens. And if you don't have a body on him at the point of those screens or those handoffs, those guys are just coming off and letting it fly, and playing in space, which, you know, any of those three, Wiggins too, even in space, is really, really dangerous. So I think the first thing that jumped out to me was they put Tatum on Draymond. They put Robert Williams on Wiggins, and they put Al on Kevon Looney. And, you know, that allows the unique thing to me was that they put Robert on, or Bob Williams on Wiggins and not Horford. But because what Williams Robert Williams changes the entire game with just his help side defense being in the paint. It's kind of like a Giannis esque kind of thing where he just kind of roams and plays free safety and is always at those dots, always in the painted area. So everything at the rim just becomes so challenging. So I think in that respect, I thought that was a really interesting adjustment. They tried to do the same thing in game two, obviously did not work to the same effect. I think the big thing in the series is ultimately going to be if the Celtics can score. And, you know, you watch in our series, because you're not going to stop the Warriors. They're going to have these runs, you know, third quarters and all sorts of things where they just explode. And you got to obviously be able to limit what they do offensively, but you have to be able to score with them. And, you know, what we did defensively against the Celtics was basically load up on Tatum and Brown and just really be heavy in the gaps and, you know, be on blocks and elbows and blocks and elbows, said that right, and make them get off the ball, right? And the games in which they won, they did. And they got off the ball early in the game, because and that to me is a huge differentiating factor, is if they get off the ball early in the game and guys like Grant Williams, Peyton Pritchard, Derek White, Marcus Smart, like they get rhythm shots early in the game and throughout the first three quarters, that three that they're now shooting in the fourth quarter looks totally different if they're 3 of 6 or 3 of 5 than if they're like 0 of 1 or 1 of 3. Like, you have to, like, those guys don't want to get off the ball as the game comes down to the wire, like when it comes to nut crunching time. So if they've gotten off the ball throughout the course of a game, it just, the ball moves, there's drives, kicks, sprays, their offense just functions significantly better. But the interesting thing is the Warriors haven't kind of loaded up to those guys the same way that we did. And as a result, you've seen like what Derek White did in game one, where he goes nuts and has a huge game. Marcus played great in game one as well. So I think it's ultimately going to be like those other guys. I think Tatum and Brown have proven to be like obviously really, really capable and talented scorers. But I think it's going to ultimately come down to those other, like Al had 26 in game one. And, you know, I think they said that the other starters had 6 points in game two,
yeah,
collectively.
Al, Marcus.
Right. And, yep, so I think it's going to be a great, great series. The other interesting thing is like the Celtics haven't been great at home. You know, it's not like you're going back to Boston and, you know, are guaranteeing 2 wins, you know, far from it. Like they've been actually better on the road in the playoffs. So I think it's going to be a great, great finals for sure.
It's been fun. Do you, like, are you invested at all?
No.
You don't care?
Do not care.
It makes no difference to you?
No, not really. I mean, it's not us, so it's like.
Yeah. Yeah, fair.
No, I just want to see, I'd love to see seven games. I'd love to see good basketball.
That's fair.
I mean, I guess there's a part of you that, like, I guess maybe it feels a little better to, like, lose to the eventual champions, but.
Or to see, like, JP get a ring.
Yeah, fine. But the Warriors.
It's okay if you can say you don't have.
No, I mean, I love JP. That's my guy.
Nick gets a ring if the Celtics win. There was this fun stat that of the your sister actually told me this yesterday. I didn't know this, but when it got to the conference finals, whoever won, there was going to be a Michigan guy.
That's right. Coach Beilein actually all put us on a text thread.
Go Blue.
And sent out a text and said, I'm so proud of all you guys. Wow. One of you guys is going to be getting a ring.
It's so beautiful.
And there was some shit talking that took place in the text. Someone was like, it's going to be us. No, it's going to be us. It was fun.
Speaking of text, did anyone reach out to you during the playoffs?
Sure.
Like,
a bunch of people did.
Anyone notable who you hadn't heard from in a while?
I'm not trying to put private individual conversations on blast.
All right, fine.
Sorry, I know it's not very fun. I will say Ryan Anderson flew out to Miami for game 7 and last minute flight. That one meant a lot to me. Love Ryan. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I didn't know that. I wasn't trying to lead to an answer. I was genuinely curious.
No. I mean, a bunch of people reached out and were very supportive of kind of the challenges that I was going through and just encouraging. So it's always nice, I guess.
Beautiful.
I mean, it doesn't really make it feel that much better, but it's still good.
All right. That's all I got.
That's all you got?
Yeah. That was fun.
What can people expect this summer from the pod?
A lot. Nice. We're dialing it up.
You're dialing it up. I'm just kind of along for the ride.
No.
I'm just kind of holding on to coattails and just, here we go.
Now we're dialing it up. Blue Wire's got the beautiful studio at the Wynn that we have for Summer League, so we're going to knock some stuff out there.
Love that.
We got some people we're lining up. We got some stuff we're trying to do outside of the podcast.
Pretty vague.
Yeah, keep it vague. But there's some good stuff. Yeah, I'm excited about it. You have a big week coming up. Really, the reason I flew here to interview with you is because I couldn't come to Miami in a couple days because you're going under the knife.
I am.
You're getting a nose job.
No.
We don't have to talk about
it. I mean, this feels like a HIPAA violation.
It might be.
No. I mean, I think I can talk about it, but maybe I could.
Can I not talk about
open
it?
Open a class action lawsuit against you, or civil lawsuit, sorry.
We can cut this.
For bringing up my
I think it's interesting.
Safety.
It's also relevant to your playing career.
Yeah, no,
you're going to look so much better on the court with your nose job.
I think this is from a long time ago. I have a fracture in my nose that has resulted in a deviated septum of sorts. Mm. Turns out I really have always, I do a lot of yoga. I do a lot of Pilates. And I really struggle to nasal breathe. I have my whole life. And I just thought that's how the body was. I thought everybody struggled to nasal breathe. And I've been listening and reading more. Andrew Huberman did an entire podcast, Huberman Lab podcast, on nasal breathing and the benefits and importance of it. And I talked to teammates who'd gotten the same kind of thing. I'm not going to name their names because that would definitely be a HIPAA violation.
I will not either.
And they said it was like life-changing for their sleep, for their performance, for their conditioning, all those sorts of things. So yeah, it's I'm opting in to the surgery. It's totally an elected surgery.
Yeah, no one has to get a nose job.
Yeah. It's not what it is. Nothing structurally, structurally will change, but nothing visually will change.
You can't parlay it into like, actually, could you bring this down?
No, nothing visually will change. I'll be still the same old self.
It's going to change. You're going to sleep better.
Yeah,
you're
going to be able to
breathe.
Hopefully,
conditioning will probably be
hopefully
better.
I really hope that it is life changing. I mean, we'll see.
You know what is going to be really interesting for the long shot community is we're going to know in 2 weeks if you sound different.
Yeah, that's an interesting caveat.
Because if you can't breathe through your nose, I imagine, like, talk with a plugged nose, you sound ridiculous.
Yeah, we'll see.
So maybe, but yeah, maybe you'll sound different.
Yeah, I mean, it's. I figured the time was now.
It's going to be great.
It doesn't really put you out for that long. So it just,
well, good luck.
10 days or so. And then I'm going to hit the ground running with my training. But
all right. Well, it's going to be beautiful. You're going to be a changed man next time we see you.
Shall see. We shall see.
All right. That's all I got.
Some housekeeping moving forward. So do I intro hello and welcome from now on, or is it still you?
I think we're going to have to fight it
over. Should we leave it up to a vote?
Yeah, we'll leave it up to
a vote.
I think I will win the vote, actually.
You probably will, dude. You're way more liked than I am. Publicly, for
right
sure.
Right now, for sure.
But I even think within our community, you're way more liked.
I don't think that's true. We'll put it up to a vote. Who's cooler?
All right. Davis is definitely cooler.
All right, bye.
I dress better, but Davis is cooler. All right. And that'll
we
do.
Did. No, I'll take it out.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. See ya.
Bye-bye.